2012 and with the Olympic Games just around the corner, we here at Red Ice Radio, where so many of the esoteric and conspiratorial threads surrounding the 2012 Sion Olympics was initially woven in 2008. We are now going to lay out both the facts and the speculations surrounding this occult mega ritual. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I want to thank you for tuning in today, friends, new and regular listeners. This is a program we dedicate to Rick Clay, his memory and his work. He passed way too early, and his story is one that has resonated around the world. The conspiracies and symbolism surrounding the 2000 Olympics has caught the attention of a lot of people. Even the mainstream media have been poking at it with a stick. From a few feet away, of course, terrified that something authentic will jump out at them. So, today we are going to talk with various guests about the upcoming opening ceremony and the potential false flag terrorist event that might take place during the Games, and many of the other theories of what might be unfolding, like some kind of UFO ET event. But first, let's begin with a flashback back to Rick Clay from 2008.
It's been bandied around the internet quite a bit, but if you shuffle the Olympics 2012 logo around, you can spell the word Zion. But obviously Zion stands for the term New Jerusalem. I mean, having seen the Ian Crane speech and everything, I had an urge to start my own research into this. I wanted to find out if what was saying could be proven, kind of thing. First thing that brought to my mind was the poem by William Blake. And William Blake wrote a poem in the 18th century called Jerusalem. And there's a paragraph, the final like few words in that poem says, "I will not cease from mental flight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land." So basically, William Blake was a known 18th century esotericist with connections to the Freemasons. But essentially in that poem, we'd got an acknowledgement from a guy connected with esoteric research that they were intent on building Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. We're thinking, like, when we talk about the Olympics 2012, we're talking about something that's been planned for hundreds of years, and there's a lot of proof that I've dug up that can show that. There was a video released by the Olympic Committee, and this was a stadium design video. And it was this crazy CGI, I don't know what you want to call it, action film on how they're going to build the Olympic 2012 stadium. Given what Ian had spoke about with aliens and Independence Day style spaceships and stuff, this has got it all in it. Basically, within 40 seconds of this video, there's four chimneys that stand like an 11-11, but then it moves into the most significant symbology you could ever see with, like, you know, an Independence Day style mothership for a roof, little UFOs flying all around the London Eye. And then it ends up robotic streetwalkers in the middle of London stomping around the place towards the Olympic Stadium. I mean, it's pretty weird to watch it. Does this mean that there is a significant event looming for the Olympics? 1972 Olympics in Munich. Funnily enough, these were the world's first stage for global terrorism. You know, the very first global, like, you know, declared as global terrorism, the first act was in the 1972 Munich Olympics. And these Olympics, there were 11 Israelis killed, so we've got the number 11 there. And they were killed by a group called Black September, which is obviously the ninth month. So yeah. It's obviously a 9/11 you've got there. And that particular Olympics were host to 121 countries, which is 11 times 11. So you've got a significant event there with first, like, global stage for terrorism, as it is. I started thinking, well, you know, the year 1984, there's obviously Olympics in that year. And it's synonymous with the George Orwell book of Big Brother and, you know, a completely, you know, oppressive state, if you like, a new world order kind of background. And I'd briefly remembered hearing things about a closing ceremony in the 1984 Olympics and did some rooting around on the internet and obviously came across a video. In the 1984 Olympics, which were held in Los Angeles, they closed the ceremony and the audience didn't even expect this because most of the audience thought it was real at the time. It closed with a UFO flying over the Olympic Stadium, kind of communicating with the audience in a Close Encounters of the Third Kind style. Right. The UFO eventually, like, closes down and lands in the centre of the stadium, at which point there's a load of smoke, and then this alien gets out and tells the audience that he likes what he sees there. So you got this really strange thing out of the middle of nowhere. No one was expecting it, and I don't know how you'd ever connect Olympics with this UFO event in the first place. Obviously, 1984, symbolic year, UFO landing.
Creatures of a day. man is merely a shadow. But when God-given glory comes upon him in victory, a bright light shines upon us, and our life is sweet. When the end comes, the loss of flame brings darkness. But his glory is bright forever.
Been created. And now,
he thinks we have a visitor.
The alien himself. That is no one on stilts. That is a man 7 feet 8 inches tall.
For almost 100 years, you have celebrated the best that humanity has to offer. You call it the Olympic Games. And for that, and for the cities which have kept the Olympic ideal alive, I salute you!
Suddenly he's gone.
The company who created that logo is a company called Wolf Allen's. It's a brand agency. And this brand agency was set up by a chap called Wally Allen's. And this man was responsible for branding corporate Europe. So basically, you know, GE Capital, all these logos that have kind of sunk into the subconscious of sorts, these are all like created by this man called Wally Allen's, who created the 2012 logo as well. And it turns out his dad was a Freemason. So the chances are that, you know, there's an interview online where he references his dad trying to get him to be a Freemason. He never actually says whether he is or not. Chances are, it's in the family. And, you know, there's these messages in the logos that this man's produced. It's a Freemasonic branding, you know, company for corporate Europe. At this point, you know, you've got this connection to Freemasonry with the logo and stuff, and it moves much higher than Freemasonry. That's just like the outside protection for this stuff. I basically loaded up, Google Earth, wanted to look at the London site from the air. I wanted to see, you know, what it is that's so special about this place. And, it just so happened that the particular site in Stratford was the only last bit of wasteland that was that was left vacant in London. It was the one last place that they could do things for something like the Olympics. So, you know, it's quite lucky that they had it in the first place. And what I noticed was I started looking at the actual street plan of this place. And you've got a number of roads that circle the site. And the first road is a road called the East Cross Route, which is a reference to the Eastern Cross. The Eastern Cross is an Orthodox cross, and it's a modified version of the Patriarchal Cross. It's got two smaller cross beams across the side. The next road down, you've got Carpenter's Road, which encircles the site. Carpenter, who was a carpenter? Oh, good old Joseph. Next road down, you've got a road called the Great Eastern Road. So when you refer to something as the Great Eastern, it's obviously like the Great Eastern Star. So you look into the Great Eastern Star. It turns out that the Order of the Eastern Star is the largest fraternal organisation in the world that both men and women can join. It was founded by someone highly connected with the Freemasons, and their symbol is it's the pentagram. So this is the next road down. Moving on around the Olympic site, if you envisage we're encapsulating the whole Olympic site here, the next road along is Angel Lane. Famous angel is the Angel Gabriel. So we've got Angel Lane here. Next road along, we've got Temple Mills Lane, where the water mills belong to the Knights Templar. So another connection there. The Knights Templar were the poor fellow soldiers of Christ in the Temple of Solomon. And then encapsulating all of this is Church Road. It's obviously another biblical road name. All the way around the Olympics 2012 site, which you could call Zion if you go with the logo, biblical road names surrounding the whole site. There's not one road name that's not biblical. So you start looking at that and you think, what the hell is going on?
This is William Henry. My website is williamhenry.net. I'm an author, investigative mythologist, and symbolist. My most recent book, The Secret of Sion, explores the symbolism of ascension, the galactic center, and especially the beaming garment worn by all the ancient Stargate travelers. I have been looking at the symbolism actually since back in 2010 when Anish Kapoor's orbital tower was first presented. This is that kind of serpentine tower that's the symbol of the 30th Olympiad that's parked right beside the games. It's to become the new icon for London. And everybody looked at this thing and was kind of like aghast. It's like, what is this thing? It looks like some kind of a serpent coming up out of the ground, this red serpent coming up out of the ground. Well, in fact, Anish Kapoor himself said it was designed for the Olympics, of course, and is modeled after the Tower of Babel, the Stargate to Heaven, or Ladder Tower or Stairway to Heaven. And it's not surprising, coming from Kapoor, whose noted artworks often feature wormhole motifs. But what got me about it, Henrik, was the fact that Maya's 2012 symbolism describes a serpent rope, an umbilical cord, this mysterious transportation system emerging from the galactic center in 2012, out of which or upon which rides the Mayan savior figure, Quetzalcoatl. And what's fascinating is that when you put the diagram of the Mayan serpent rope or umbilical cord coming from the galactic center next to Anish Kapoor's tower, London Tower, you're seeing an amazing correspondence. And with that, I started really putting a keen eye on the 2012 Olympics for more Stargate symbolism. And boy, it has not disappointed. Ever since then, we've started to see an acceleration of this Stargate wormhole symbolism appearing in Britain. It's connected with the rainbow motif, which is the rainbow bridge as an interchangeable symbol with the Stargate or wormhole. Popping up all over Britain are these magnificent art installations featuring the rainbow. And then lo and behold, next thing we get is an announcement of the mascots for the Olympic Games, the London Olympic Games, Wenlock and Mandeville, these little one-eyed alien-type creatures, or almost alien-looking creatures, that ride a rainbow to the Games. And they've been featuring this whole rainbow motif in their story. They've made film clips out of the rainbow, Adventures on a Rainbow, Rainbow Rescue, and Rainbow to the Games. And one starts to wonder, are we talking about this symbolism as being possibly like downloaded from some cosmic source where we're talking about all this rainbow bridge symbolism, Stargate wormhole symbolism? And the ultimate question, is it possible it's some kind of an alignment with the center of the Milky Way galaxy, just as the Mayans had predicted?
Is it possible, William, that they are aware of the symbolism and want to put it out into the mass consciousness, or are they unknowingly participants in a greater plan here? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of both, actually. I think there are probably plans, designs, themes that are submitted. It's uncanny. I just have to say this. It's almost like my work as happened with the Norway Spiral interview we did a couple of years ago. From time to time, my work intuits, even predicts some of these future global Stargate events. At London 2012 is no different. And I'm just simply following the trail of Sion, which is a very key piece, as you know, in the London Olympics, because as Rick Clay pointed out a number of years ago, the London Olympics logo itself spells Sion or Zion with a C. They both mean the same thing. My piece is this. Sion is a reference to Jerusalem, to the New Jerusalem, to the Second Coming and the Sons of Sion and so forth. But it is also, if you follow the trail of the mystic trail and symbolic trail of Sion as found in Judeo-Christian tradition, you are led to the center of the galaxy as the actual location of Sion. It is inhabited. It's inhabited by just humans made perfect who are portrayed as in rainbow-type bodies or as rainbow beings, and they seem to come and go from the galaxy. Now, if I know this, Henrik, and I've just been researching this stuff 25 years, I'm not part of some secret cabal. If we're alleging some secret cabal does know this, then they are probably reading at least the same information that I am and perhaps are in contact with these very beings. I mean, I know that sounds like a stretch, but it's either we are talking about a contact here with this race, or this is a cosmic download being received by various artists, Anish Kapoor, various other individuals involved with planning, and maybe even, I can go so far as to say, myself included, since my book, The Secret of Sion, is a sort of key or guidebook to the Olympic symbolism. The official explanation is that they have taxi symbols on them. They have their one-eyed because of all the number of cameras in London. But yet on another level, I mean, with them riding the rainbow to the games, you have to ask, well, what are the odds that you've got this rainbow motif going? It's directly connected with Zion. And here we're talking about these rainbow beings manifesting as the mascots of the games. I mean, it's coincidental. It's fun. It means nothing, but it might mean a lot, actually. It might mean everything. And I think you can go overboard reading some of the symbolism. You can make connections that seem to be solid but might not be that solid. But still, there's unquestionably another layer of meaning that is here to be interpreted with all the symbolism in London. The opening ceremony, when they hauled out this incredible model of London with the snaking Thames beside this giant pillar or staff almost, and then the recreation of Glastonbury Tor, that's pretty mind-blowing stuff. That's a real tip-off that they're doing something, a mega ritual of occult significance here, some kind of profound ceremony is unfolding. That river that snakes its way through the center of the opening ceremony is, of course, the Thames, but at another level, it's the Milky Way itself. And what we're going to see there is this tree serpent symbolism come together in a profound way, just as Maya 2012 symbolism features the tree of life, the cross of life, this cosmic or starry alignment of 2012, and the serpent rope that winds its way along it. So we're being treated here to a masterstroke of this occult symbolism, and we won't know its ultimate meaning, of course, until the event actually happens, and then that will, of course, be open to interpretation. But I'm headed to London next week just to have a look-see. I'm going to take a climb up into Anish Kapoor's tower and peer down at the Olympic Stadium just to see, feel, experience it for myself, and then I'll just certainly be glued to the TV on the opening and closing ceremony, because if Madonna's halftime show at the Super Bowl is any indication, I think they've got something absolutely wild in store for us.
It's an interesting director of the opening ceremony, Danny Boyle. He's done some interesting movies, of course, and for July 22nd, the opening, they have spent about £27 million for the opening ceremony. So that's quite a bit. What can you say more about the Glastonbury and Jesus connection, William? How significant is that, do you think, to the these games and to the opening ceremony and the overall symbolism that you've been following?
Well, here's the overall idea. Jesus is an avatar of or from Zion, the galactic center. And all of the symbolism, the selection of Glastonbury Tor and its references to the William Blake Jerusalem poems, all points to this plot, if you will, that we're going to be seeing some elaborate ceremony where we might even see some kind of a reference to a messianic appearance. People try to tie William, Prince William, into this whole scenario. I'm not so sure about that. I think it's very fascinating. But I think we're going to see maybe some kind of surprise special effects, not to the extent of Project Bluebeam, but something along those lines that will certainly get our attention.
People speculate on many different things about the games of a potential UFO landing, the real deal. Some people say it might be a fake one. There's a possibility of false flag terrorism during the events. We've seen an incredible militarization of the games as well. So there's a flip side to some of the things we talked about here. How significant is any of this in your view, William?
Well, it's bread and circus time, isn't it? Da do 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 da 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 da. You know, let's just keep it simple. And we sometimes fall into is this, you know, this idea that it's all totally, totally meaningful when we really need to keep our eye on the big picture here. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I think the symbols themselves, the basic symbols of the tree, the serpent, the Tor, the gateway, the rainbow, those are the key aspects to be focusing on. And the militarization and all that is just something I haven't paid a lot of attention to, but might take some time to do so.
If we're in the context of the, you know, the rainbow people or the enlightened ones, the shining ones that you've been talking about, do you think that they would have an interest of literally and physically announcing themselves during an event like this?
I think it's a very good possibility because it's mass consciousness gathered together in a state of heightened expectation that something wonderful is going to happen, even mysterious. That's the track record of the opening ceremonies of the games. There's almost, and especially the closing ceremonies, of course. There's always a pill in that hamburger. There's always something in there for those with eyes to see. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did use an event like this. I mean, that became kind of clear to me. I referenced Madonna's halftime show a moment ago. When I watched that, it was so rife with symbolism that it became clear. This is exactly how a cabal or a New World Order type group would introduce this New World religion. It would be at a global ceremony such as this, where the pill gets slipped into the hamburger and those with eyes to see get the message. I think there's been enough talk among intelligent people around the world that a new consciousness is emerging. And it is clear that this new consciousness has a specific set of symbols, the tree, the serpent, the rainbow, the wormhole, and advanced or awakened humans who manifest in the rainbow body or as rainbow beings. And I've been tracking this profusion of this rainbow imagery. I mean, gosh, here in America, we have Frisky's cat food. And when the movie Puss in Boots was out, they had this amazing commercial where Puss had this magic wand. He visits a cat in a kitchen, uses the magic wand to open up a rainbow wormhole. Puss and this other cat jump through it to the magical cat world, do all kinds of magical things. Puss uses the wand to open up the rainbow wormhole again and return them to the ordinary world. We're using Stargate's wormholes and rainbow imagery to sell cat food these days. So it's anchored in our consciousness. It's everywhere, and it's all part of the consciousness of mankind adopting and accepting this profound symbolism of this new consciousness, which is actually the ancient consciousness. A mega magical ceremony is what is being offered here. And at this moment, we don't know exactly what the message is. We can speculate, we can read the signposts, but it won't be until that day where we know exactly what it is they want us to feel, think, or believe. But it will be crystal clear by the end of the opening ceremony. We're going to have over a billion pairs of eyeballs, all tuned and focused on the same event at the same time. And those who know the power of the thought sphere and can link that with the power of the cloud will have tremendous power at their fingertips at that moment to move or shift human consciousness.
Now, if we go back for a moment here to the Glastonbury tour, which is again one of the items, I guess, they're going to have replicated during the opening ceremony. There's been authors speculating that one time it was the possible location of the Holy Grail, etc., another kind of theme that you've been following as well. So it's very echoes of the, as you said before, William, the New Jerusalem. It's a play on Jesus. It's a play on, I would say, more of an esoteric Christianity, perhaps, than an Orthodox one. Is that correct, do you think?
Definitely, because the esoteric Christianity is the green religion. It's the religion of Osiris. It's the religion of the ancient pagans, and it's all based on the concept of rebirth, renewal, regeneration, resurrection. Very controversial terms because politically it's all being spun into green politics and totalitarianism. But this is kind of the underpinnings of what we're talking about, and especially that inclusion of the tour. You're right. I mean, this is something I've been writing about, and in fact, I'm writing a new book right now called The Kit, about the desire by the New World Order types to assemble these various relics, including the Ark of the Covenant and the wand or scepter of power, the flask of manna, the cruse of the anointing oil, and other power tools or objects. And this is exactly the type of event you would expect them to create in order to display such events. And if the Ark of the Covenant symbolism shows up there at the tour in any way, shape, or form, I'm going to be all over it and sounding the alarm bell that this is a total false flag type of event, and we really want to be careful with who we're dealing with here. Just, hey, enjoy it, everybody. I mean, this is some really heavy stuff, potentially dark stuff, but at the same time, it's a major global celebration. It's a time for all of us to put our own thoughts into this, to shift it in the manner that we would like to see shifted in. And this is in part why I'm going to London next week, just to have a look-see for myself and to really get a sense of wow, I mean, what is it going to be like when we are truly in a global civilization? Whether you like that idea or not, we're about to experience a major manifestation of that new culture, that new earth, in less than a month.
Well, that's interesting, too. I have one more point on that, because it feels, as I've been watching the news, that at the same time as there is an openness and a celebration, again, the flip side of that, and, you know, we don't have to overfocus on it, but there is a tendency now to also lock down things. There's a fear also surrounding the games because, again,
yes,
of the reality of terrorism or false flag terrorism as well. So, I mean, it's really...
Yeah, people are... Yeah, they're like holding their breath because everybody knows something could happen. And that's part of the mix of the energy that's here. And that's when we're highly suggestible, is when we're on the edge of our seats wondering if it's going to happen, if there's going to be some kind of a terrible event surrounding the Olympics. I certainly hope there isn't, but I'm fully aware, as you're saying, yeah, that's a very good possibility.
Hello, this is Stuart A. Swerdlow for Expansions.com. I look forward to seeing you and hearing you on my radio shows, on my website, and at all future events. The Olympics this year are too much of many things coming together to leave it as a simple event. So the Illuminati would never let that happen. Of course, it's the year 2012, so it's the end times according to the Mayan calendar, which really isn't correct anyway. It is also the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. It is also in London, the center of the global empire. So there's many factors coming together all at once. And when we look at why the British have ground-to-air missiles located on the rooftops of private residences around the area, we have to assume that they are expecting something to come from the sky. And so it is my belief, and I may be wrong, but it is my belief that this would be the perfect opportunity for the Illuminati to stage the alien invasion with billions of people focused on one place on the Earth at one time. They can have anything coming in the sky with Blue Beam Project. They can use the missiles to fire at them. They can make quite an event. Plus, it is my understanding that they will have the Queen coming down the Thames River on a destroyer. So very much the commander of an army, that she will be seen as the queen of that army. And so it's a very, very symbolic time. And I think we can expect something of a global proportion to happen then.
So is that where it begins and ends, do you think, with the false flag UFO invasion? And maybe we can talk a little bit more specifically about that. Is this a landing? Is this something we're going to see and then it disappears? Or is this going to be like official contact and disclosure and the whole packet here?
The Illuminati or the New World Order are never going to give real disclosure. They may give a kind of information that they want people to understand, which I have seen happening for the last 6 to 9 months. Just about every week now, there is some kind of information on the news related to outer space. For example, the oceans on Titan, even information about Kuiper Belt energy heading towards the asteroid belt and towards the Earth. Many, many things going on in space. But as far as a staged alien invasion is concerned, it will most likely involve Blue Beam Project, which will project holographic images into the lower atmosphere of the planet so that people will think there is an invasion fleet. They may even use satellites to transmit laser beams towards the ground to make people think that the Earth is under attack. They have many ways to make things look real when, in fact, they're all artificial.
Is this why they have the buildup of the military in London now as well, to actually in some way respond to this false flag thing that they're setting up?
Absolutely. There's no other reason for them to build up. I mean, there hasn't been a military buildup like this in Britain since World War II.
Right.
They're obviously expecting something. And the mere fact that they have occupied the rooftops of private homes without permission is very significant, because that would only happen under wartime conditions, when personal rights and property, respectful of personal property, is no longer valid. So in effect, they're already showing a state of war.
Do you think that this will happen during the opening ceremony or during the games, or maybe a little bit after? There's been some Obviously, people have different takes on this, and maybe they will leave the opening for what it is. It's going to be, well, some kind of event. I want to ask you a little bit more about that specifically. Maybe if there might be some kind of, you know, Svengali hypnotizing mind control thing happening during the openings there. But if there's a timeline on this, when do you think it actually will happen? Opening, during the games, or after?
No, I don't think it will happen in the opening, because they want people to have an attention. They want people interested and focused on the events, so that for a day or two or three, people are watching under normal circumstance. Feel that the opening ceremonies and even the peripheral accoutrements during the day, subsequent to that, will be triggering or mind control programming triggers for Green Star programming, which will activate those functions in those people watching. I think if I were doing it, that they would probably wait a few days at the world's attention. They would probably have in the very beginning of the Olympics some kind of normal events of the Olympics that are exciting, or maybe keeping people at the edge of their watch. Maybe some kind of competition between two countries, rival countries, or two rival athletes. That will make people want to watch even more. And it will be during that time then that they would stage something. I would imagine they would do it more in the evening or nighttime, mm-hmm. because the blue beam would be more apparent. Although, if you remember, in the last several months, in daylight, there have been people in London filming UFOs over the bridges, over the rivers. Tourists have been taking pictures that have been shown on CNN and BBC of UFOs in broad daylight. So they are already preparing for this, as if they were testing to see if people can notice these things in the daylight.
Wow. Could that be UAVs and stuff like that, that, again, the military has actually taken the opportunity to just test some of their gear and spy and everything else during the time as well?
Yes, of course. And, you know, the U.S. does have bases in Britain and in nearby countries. And so it's very easy for U.S. Advanced aircraft to make overflights of British territory. And if you even recall, a year or so ago, these British pilots that were flying towards London saw huge UFOs off the coast. They were, I think, over a kilometer wide. That happened at least twice. Last summer, so they're definitely in preparation.
I want to ask you a little bit about the colors, the letters, the overall theme, if you will, that has been chosen for these XXX games, as they're called, the 30th Olympiad that we're having. Your comments on the Scion logo, if you recast the 2012 numbers, you can spell out Scion if you have anything to say about that. But furthermore, very interesting color choices, I think, in some cases as well, not only for the Olympics logo, but we have these one-eyed alien mascots, Wenlock and Mandeville flying in on the rainbow. There's kind of an alien theme, and again, a prominent, very, very bright colors here. What do you think is the significance of that, Stuart?
Those colors are triggers, because that would activate Green Star programming, sexual ritual magic programming, and subsidiary programmings like Vessel in sexual ritual, etc., which I write about in my books. These are triggers. They're to get the audience into an altar that is connected to the Green Star or alien programming. And as far as Scion is concerned, you know, the Illuminati, and especially the Windsor family, claim a direct descendancy from the Christ figure and Mary Magdalene, which I've also written about in my work. And so they will ultimately use this to prove their authority or their justification to rule the earth, since they are the descendants of Christ. And that's what they will use this for.
The line of David is also one I've heard. I don't know if that specifically also is related to the Christ line, but there is a couple of bloodlines, I guess, going back to the biblical era then.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the Christ was supposedly descendant from line of house of David as well.
Right. So, I've heard other people, Stuart, talk about that they would take the opportunity in some way or another to crown Prince William as the the king of the new age or something like that. Some people claim it's an antichrist archetype, but they will try to push it as the Christ or the savior. Any comments on that?
Yes, I've heard of this, and I do believe that this is a distinct possibility, but his mother, Princess Diana, will be proclaimed the Queen of Heaven, and they will show that she had a direct lineage to the Christ line as well. And in fact, as you may know, in Norway, there is a woman who supposedly is channeling Princess Diana and claims that she was the grandmother of Jesus, which actually makes her even more senior, have more seniority than the Virgin Mary, who was only his mother. So they're really putting a lot of power behind this, a lot of lineage, DNA, justification behind what they're going to claim is their right to rule the world. And when this staged alien invasion comes, we will not see who these invaders are. They will not show that to us. However, there will be a savior race that will come who will say they've been monitoring the situation and they're saving the earth and getting rid of these invaders. And then the savior race will show that they are our ancestors and they created life on the earth. And they will then bring in the cloned Christ who will say that the New World Order is his new holy empire and we must all follow it and the New World Religion. So it'll be a very nice, neat little package that will be instigated by the staged alien invasion.
Now, if that timeline, if that fallout of events is true, then obviously something here is hinged on the 2012 Olympics. It seems like this is where the agenda goes into overdrive. This is where they actually put in the first move to begin to openly announce this, I guess. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, you know, let's face it, there's only 6 months left or less actually to their agenda of December 21 being the end of their current situation, so that by the end of this year, they want to have complete global domination. And so they need to act fast now. Everything will happen quite in succession. I think the second half of this year that we've just started is going to be quite interesting and many, many events one after the other.
Now, there's quite a bit of interesting religious undertones over all of this that we talked about, or messianic as well. In the opening ceremony, there's references to William Blake's famous poem. And then there is also the Glastonbury tour, where allegedly the Holy Grail was buried. That's going to be replicated during the opening ceremonies. They're playing a lot on this. What do you think the reasoning is for this, and how aware are the people who are designing behind the choreography or whatever you want to call it for the opening ceremony? We know that Danny Boyle, the film director, has been charged for taking care of this 27. What was it now? £1 million, I think, overall, the opening ceremony. What's their reasoning, do you think, and how aware are they of this kind of symbolism that they're playing on?
From what I understand, most of the people involved in the hands-on are given the information, given the symbolism, and told to use it in a certain way. They themselves may not know why they're using those symbolisms, but they're told to do so. It is the royal families or the Illuminati families themselves who create the images, who create the symbols, and then delineate them or distribute them to those who will work with them to present to the public. I know, for example, that this is done in Hollywood. I know when I worked in Hollywood, I was told by many producers that every year by the government and by certain families, they're given certain stories to present to the public. And they're told, this is how it's supposed to end up. Now write the story that leads up to it, and here are the symbols. So it's kind of like that. And these people don't know why they're doing it. They don't know really what it means behind the scenes, but they know they have to present it.
We've seen an incredible influx as well, Stuart, in the kind of alien invasion movies. And usually it's actually, well, it's really realistic at this stage, the way they've developed the special effects and everything. And it's usually in suburban areas. It's military fighting with UFOs and everything else. It feels like they're really being trying to push these buttons and almost acclimatize people to this very basic concept. But still, it would be an incredible shocker to the majority of people if something like this happened. And as we know, Stuart, during shocking events, traumatic events, you know, there is an opportunity, if you will, for actually instigating some level of mind control or manipulation of people, correct?
Yes, of course. But, you know, as I mentioned, in the last several months, almost every other day, there's been some kind of story on the news about outer space. For example, they said that in our galaxy alone, there were 300 to 400 million Earth-like planets. And they even said by 2014, we will discover a planet with life on it. So how would they present these figures unless they knew for sure? And they also mentioned not long ago that it would be very likely that much of the life on other worlds would be reptilian-based. I mean, this is unconventional news that they're saying this now. So in a way, the people who are indoctrinated by the global services like CNN, Fox, BBC, etc., they've heard this before. They expect this. So maybe it will not be such a big shock. The truth is that the reptilian civilization was here first. They did colonize the Earth first, and humans or mammalians came afterwards. So from their perspective, it's their planet and we are the invaders. So yes, I believe that this is how it will be presented ultimately. Of course, they will not give the full truth. They're not going to tell people that they're mind controlling and that the Olympics and the alien invasion were all staged for their public consumption. I don't think they will say that, but they will present it in such a way to make people acquiesce to the idea that reptilian energy is more powerful, is original, and has the right to be here. And I think that's already been put into the public mind already.
Is this year's Olympics a global mind control event?
All Olympics, every year. And even the location that they choose are a global mind control event. But this year, particularly because it's 2012, because it's the Diamond Jubilee, this is a very, very significant Olympics. And we really need to keep our eyes on it.
Can you briefly just, I'm going to go back to that, just tell us what Green Star Programming is then for those who don't know?
Green Star Programming is designed for various types of alien communication, interaction, and awareness, so that under that Green Star umbrella, you will find contactees, abductees, channeling, etc. And so this was designed back in the 1960s by the U.S. government, who created the New Age and all of these alien contacts and information, so that people would eventually be led to this point where it will be completely accepted. And we can even add the Vatican into all of this, because remember, in the last couple of years, twice the Vatican has said that there are aliens out there and that they are our brothers in Christ.
That's right. They what was it again? Were they not in? They didn't need baptism or being baptized, or because yes, they were already saved, right? Or what was the deal there?
Well, the information was that they may be so spiritual that they already live under the grace of God and do not need to be saved.
Right. That's right. Now, do you think that? Well, both people visiting London this summer and people living there will be in trouble. Is there actually a real potential danger for an actual terrorist event, or again, a false flag one? Is that something you're concerned about, or that you think people in the area should be concerned about?
Well, definitely. I think people living in the London area or near any Olympic venue should be observant and concerned about what's going to happen, because I really feel something will happen, you know, and I cannot pinpoint on what spot exactly it's going to occur, but I would take amazing precautions and I would stay away if possible. I would not be in that area during the Olympic time period.
Yeah, well, that's right. One of the insiders, we've been trying to get him on the program as well in unison with this show here. But he definitely mentioned again then that the G4S, or the G-Force, as I call them, who are behind the security of the Olympics, are purposely looking for incompetent people. And also the fact that he was told in some way that you, as a worker in here or a security agent, are going to be responsible for the evacuation of London, or the biggest historical event in the history of London, which is just an interesting little tidbit that I haven't heard him expand more on that yet. But I don't know. Do you think they would tell actually the people involved in this in a subtle way like this if it really was true that they were planning something?
Yeah, they have to, because they have to. The staff must be aware or expect something to happen without maybe knowing exactly what it is, because they need certain programmed responses from that staff that will enhance the entire event and make it look as if it's a natural event or something that happens suddenly and they didn't expect. But they need to be prepared for that. So yes, the staff would have to be advised that something will happen. I would, to the athletes and the countries that win certain awards, because those are also significant and symbolic, just like all sporting events, especially in the United States and in major countries, the cities that win and in the locations that win, those are very symbolic. The names of the teams, for example, the colors that they wear, all of these are symbolic and represent a mind pattern or a mind control pattern that they want to impose on the public.
I'm Bob Schlenker, blogging through theopenscroll.com and the Open Scroll blog, which is theopenscroll.blogspot.com. I've got a YouTube channel that is 17 Stormy 17. I do a lot of reverse speech and a lot of varieties of occult types of signaling and logos. I look for anything that speaks to me of an occult intent, that there's a ritual behind it. And there's a number of themes that I've been tracking in other places. And there's a cross-threading with the Olympics really heavily. And it's really sinister. It looks like there's a threat behind almost all of it. And the nature of the mass ritual suggests some things that really need our attention. Because, you know, they can't say they didn't warn us if some really bad things happen, because there's plenty that should be taken as a warning.
Can you give us an example of that? Are you talking about false flag terrorism, or are you talking about something else here?
Well, some of it would have to be in the category of false flag, because if they're announcing it in advance and kind of weaving in the testimony, that witness right there says, hey, we've got an intent. We're not really telling you up front, but read between the lines, and so you have no excuse when it happens. People who've looked at 9/11, what happened there, and some of these other terrorist events have seen imprints in advance that are basically warnings, and they describe in some detail what's about to take place. And then when it happens, it is something that we recognize looking back after the fact that, hey, they warned us.
Can you give us an example of this, of how you've seen this or spotted this in the run-up here to the games?
For example, the Olympic ceremonial costumes. They have a really odd red scarf coming out of one of the dresses. It's purple. There's zippers on it. And the way this comes out, it can't really be taken any other way than disembowelment. It looks like bloody guts. And if there wasn't a lot of disembowelment going on with satanic ritual and associated with things like MKUltra and Monarch programming, it probably would just be a dress with some kind of funky design. But given that disembowelment is a big part of the ritual and ritual magic, this is just one element that they've put right out in plain sight that they really intend to use for all of the 805 award ceremonies, with a podium as a ritual altar. And the combination of the two shows a high level of ritual magic that shows bloody guts, which could be giving us an inkling that there's going to be some kind of a microbial or bacterial or biochemical type of event that's planned that's going to impact the intestines.
Hmm. Interesting. So this is a literal thing that might be happening during or after the games, perhaps.
It could be. You know, I allow that. You know, there are some pretty smart people and some pretty devious people, and if they wanted to distribute some kind of organism to introduce it at the Olympics, and then all the people go back home to their home areas scattered throughout the world, and spread whatever it is, then this agent could later be triggered by some means. This is certainly doable within the range of technology available, and there's been quite a bit of news about different kinds of threats with bird flu, with swine flu, with other types of agents. That's a big focus right now in the news. So if you put all these things together, the bloody guts dress does really look pretty ominous, because it's hard to see it as anything else. When you look at that picture that they put out, and there's quite a few of them out there now, and you think about bloody guts, why would they do that? And could it really be taken as anything else? I don't think so. It's just not reasonable. It's too obvious.
Now, here's a question that some people have been tackling, different points of view on this, of course, but I want to get your take on this, Bob. Why would they tell us if this is a hint? Obviously, there's a question that first of all arises: are the designers of this costume aware of it, or have they just simply been, you know, getting the orders from somewhere? And the second follow-up to that is, why would they tell us about this ahead of time?
Well, I don't know who's in the know and who's not, but people do give direction about these things. And it's the way of the occult operations and the Illuminati and the Masons and all the secret societies to announce in advance what's going on. It's like part of the rules of engagement. Maybe it's written down somewhere. I don't know. But it always seems to be. This is how it works.
What's your take on the podium, the choices of the colors overall? And this is applicable to the costumes as well, that you talked about, the purple, the royal purple.
I think that's a really important connection to note, because it's generally called royal purple, but behind that color is actually a sodomy signaling, which introduces the sex magic aspect. If you're familiar with Aleister Crowley and all that he was involved with, this is not an uncommon thing. This is actually a thread that goes back to the Canaanites and beyond. And you're familiar with Sodom and Gomorrah?
Sure am, yeah.
So the purple color is a sodomite signal. And given that it's a royal color, it's actually giving us an indication about the nature of what goes on with the royals. And a lot of people would be offended by that, but, well, the truth is the truth, and it's not very well hidden if you research it out. There's been a lot of people exposing some of these connections that the royals have. And I don't like to offend people, but I don't like to withhold the truth either.
Bob, do you think that there is any kind of benefit for anybody in this? And I guess we could stay focused on the royal family in this case. Do they attain something from this, get something from it? Are we talking about energy or something else?
Absolutely. The Olympics are about worshiping Zeus. They make no claim otherwise. And Zeus is a god, like most other gods, requires sacrifice, human sacrifice. It's always been that way. And so that the Zeus-worshipping IOC, the Olympic Committee, would have some kind of ritual sacrifice being signaled in connection with the royals, it only makes sense. What they get out of it is part of the worship. They don't do that and nothing happens. They worship and they get something back out of it. And so Zeus gets something out of it, and those who worship him get something out of it, and that's why they do what they do. That's why they do the death ritual sacrifice, and that's why they do the sodomy. It goes hand in hand.
The Zeus connection is quite interesting, and if you have something else you can mention about that, I would love to hear it. Obviously, we have the Grecian, the Olympiad, the whole concept of that comes from ancient Greece, even to this day, the torch that comes to the country that hosts the Olympics is lit in Olympia by the sunlight in the special bowl, of course. We have that connection there. What's some of the other connections to the Greek pantheon and Zeus specifically?
Well, the torch is a really big one, and you can't really discount just how important that is to them. The hymn that they sing when they do their rituals. This is also dedicated to Zeus and Apollo. The prayer that's prayed in the temple of Hera when they light the flame, there's a dedication there for Zeus. And although they don't talk about it much, Pierre de Coubertin, who was the founder of Olympism in the modern era, he was very adamant that Olympism was a religion, that Olympism was to bring forth the worship of Zeus through a restoration of the games and the arts. And through the arts and the games, this would honor Zeus, and it would bring all nations together, thronging together under the roseate hue. And this was the most important thing to Pierre de Coubertin, who's still honored to this day. Well, we have a historical precedent if we look back to 1936 and what went on with the Nazi Olympics. There's a very, very close parallel there, and you can't really separate the two. So I think if we look back and see where that went, we get a pretty good sense of where it's going on this round, which sounds kind of strange, except for there's all kinds of signals that really cement those two together. The big focus on the big bell for the opening. The Nazis had a big focus on a big bell for their opening. And certainly that's the plan for the 2012 London Olympics. All these parallels, they kind of go hand in hand. The military in 1936 was really ramping up. It was a very oppressive regime, and they were bound up with the Olympics like nobody's business, just like the UK is right now. Nothing good's going to come of that. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
Tell us a bit about the Aeon of Horus and how that plays into maybe the opening ceremony itself, but also the Olympics overall.
Well, Crowley had what he called the Aeon of Osiris, followed by the Aeon of Isis, and then that was followed by the Aeon of Horus, and he intended to bring in introducing the Aeon of Horus. And Horus in the Greek is Apollo. This is what the Olympic and Olympism is all about. And with the voyage and quite a few other of these events that are taking place in the Culture Olympiad and the London 2012 Festival, they're celebrating this theme that revolves around the Aeon of Horus, which is a reintroduction of the ancient sun god. All the other religions have their sun god, and they all really kind of merge into one when you consider all the common themes. And this reintroduction of Horus appears to be the central theme of everything that I see in the Olympics. All the things that they're signaling has a basis in that. Even the tempest, which is the main theme of the opening ceremony and actually of all this preparation. Because in the tempest, by Shakespeare or Bacon as a ghostwriter, as many believe, Caliban, whose name is an anagram for cannibal, was a monster who was actually the son of the devil and an evil witch. So he's basically an Apollo figure. He's a Horus figure. So the Aeon of Horus, in a sense, is the Aeon of Caliban. And this just really matches up with all the other themes that are being promoted surrounding the Olympic celebration in this season. They celebrate what's called All the Giants, and it goes back from the ancient times of the giants who were in the land, and the giants were the children of the sons of God and the daughters of men from Genesis 6 in the Bible. The giants were typically, if you go back to the land of Canaan, you can see they were involved with ritual sacrifice, human sacrifice, cannibalism. And there's the name Cannibal or Caliban. The themes of these ritual sacrifices are just woven in throughout. So the Age of Horus, or the Aeon of Horus, is something that people have really got a hold of. It's not just, you know, Aleister Crowley, some obscure guy making some kind of ridiculous claim. This is a reality that seems to be really breaking out in our present.
Well, you talk about dimensional talk, that this is about opening a dimension, tapping into something else, or opening our world to another world. What are some of the themes surrounding this that you've found, Bob?
Well, that's a really fascinating thing, and it's a little bit complex to introduce it, but probably most simply, the bell is a common item for witches, and it's one of a small number of objects that may be used as magical weapons, according to Aleister Crowley. And they've got the bell in the stadium. And in the Bible, the bell is featured one day of the year when the high priest would go into the temple in Zion. And this is part of a connecting dot with the Zion Olympics of the logo. And so in the temple in Zion, on the Day of Atonement, the high priest would go in and he would perform a ceremony in the Holy of Holies. It was the only time of the year he could go in. He had to be ritually pure. He was the only person who could go in. And he had to have bells on. And on the hem of his garment, he had a bell, pomegranate bell. And then they just alternated all the way around on the fringe. And it was the sound of the bell that's in the Bible said to enable him to go into the presence of God in the Holy of Holies and not die. And so the ringing of the bell is a trans-dimensional signal at the least. It's associated with this dimensional access between the Most High God and his priest. So this is kind of a special thing. When you think of the bell, think of some kind of genuine trans-dimensional facilitation device. It's a portal actuator, and it's legitimate according to the biblical usage, and it appears that this feature has been leveraged for a really long time. And it's this bell that really is at the heart of the dimensional situation. But as far as a physical object goes, there's that. But as far as other indicators suggesting that there's some kind of a dimensional, interdimensional quantum entanglement situation that's being involved with this ritual, it points directly to the Olympic Park, and it binds 2012 with 1948, which is very, very fascinating. And the evidence that suggests that there's really something to this that's legitimate is fairly substantial. It's a little bit deep to go in and, you know, a 2-minute fly over the forest overview. I get into it on my blog pretty deeply, but it deals with a couple of principles that can be documented. One is that a line drawn from the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, a certain number of statute miles that equates exactly with the period of Jerusalem and the establishment of the State of Israel between 1948 and 1949. When you take that period of time, convert it into statute miles, extend the line from the Temple Mount, it passes and brackets the Olympic Park exactly. So there's an association there that says the establishment of Zion, and it plants right on the Olympic Park. And given all the things that Rick Clay brought out about the names of the streets and some of the history of that area, that's real interesting. The other primary principle involved with this connection points to Psalm 48 and what's said in Psalm 48. There's a link. Psalms is the 19th book of the Bible, and in the 48th division, it pictures the events of 1948 very accurately. It's a principle that was pretty well documented by the late J.R. Church, and fabulous principle. And I've seen quite a number of instances that really validate that, just like the other principle I mentioned, which was popularized and discovered really by another gentleman who passed away this last year. And this Psalm 48 thing, it's just mind-blowing when you think about extending it and bringing it forward as a quantum entanglement into 2012, because it paints a picture that a lot of people have suggested about the Olympics as a season of false flag event activity. So this quantum entanglement, it's a little bit esoteric in seeing this connection. If you really take the time, do your homework and investigate it, there's a legitimacy there that can't really be denied. If we kind of take a step back and ask why, what is this about, and we really have to at some point, I believe that one of the other signals really puts the right spin on this. We talked a little bit about 9/11 earlier, and the event of 9/11/2001 with the Trade Center changed the world. It was a transformative event, and given that it's a false flag event, the intent was to bring some change, to bring a transformation, and it has to have some catalyst. And I believe from that perspective, whatever is going to be going down at the Olympics here, the fruit of it, whether there's an actual terrorist event or not, just because of the mega ritual involved, the Queen, the IOC, everybody who's putting their weight behind this thing is intending to bring forth another 9/11, another transformative event, another catalyst to transition the people of the world from its current state into another in preparation for a global dominant regime. And I think that's the big picture. Biblically, it's to bring in the Antichrist, which, you know, Prince William, a lot of people point to him, people point to other people. Regardless of who it is, the world that's going to receive the Antichrist is going to have a transformation. It's not this world that we're used to now. When you look back, the world that was before 9/11/2001 was a different world. What's happened since then is that terrorism has been the pretext to strip away any guise of individual freedom and to bring the people of the world into a servitude. But that wasn't enough. There's going to need to be another transition. I've seen it signaled as a combination of numbers 9-12. We see 9-11s that people have called out, 11-11s and 9-11s signaled all over the place. There's been a series of signalings of 9-12, and what 9-12 speaks to me of is the season after 9-11, the minute after 9-11. It's the season that the catalyst was brought to bring. And I believe everything I see going on with the Olympics says that there is going to be another 9-11, and the point is to bring the 9-12, which is then the world in which the Antichrist will be able to manifest in the world, to be brought forth, and for his rule to be set up as a counterfeit Messiah.
Do you think that it's going to happen during the actual opening ceremony, when potentially we have the most eyes on you know, on the screens out there, and attendees and, you know, spectators and everything else? Or do you think it's going to happen during the games? Otherwise, that would... If it's something that happens during the opening ceremony, it's almost like, and if it's big enough, it would even question if they would go ahead with the whole games after that, right?
Well, I see one indication that tells me it won't happen really till it's done, till it's run its full course. And it has to do with the bell, book, and candle ritual. The bell, book, and candle ritual is based on an old Catholic excommunication ritual. It involves a bell, a book, and a candle, and I'll quote here. It says, in describing that, after reciting this, the priest would respond, "So be it." The bishop would ring a bell to evoke a death toll, close a holy book to symbolize the excommunicant's separation from the church, and snuff out a candle or candles, knocking them to the floor to represent the target's soul being extinguished and removed from the light of God. Now, the bell, book, and candle is an important spell in witchcraft, too. It's a curse. In the Catholic Church, they used to have 13 people involved, which you'll recognize as a coven, and this is a witchcraft spell. And I believe this mega ritual involves the bell, book, and candle, which would suggest to me that they're going to go through with the whole Olympics. They intend to wrap it up. At the end, what they do is, you know, they've rung the bell. They're going to close the book, which the book is really the Book of Life. It's the human scroll, double helix scroll, written in the genetic script, right? A, C, G, and T nucleotide bases. So humanity is really the book, and the range of engagement that's taken place during the Olympics with the full range of human life from across the nations and all peoples, right? They've rolled everybody up into that Book of Life, and so they're going to bring the Olympics to a close at the closing ceremony. They're going to ring the bell, they're going to close the book, and then they're going to snuff out the candle, which is the Olympic flame, the cauldron. So it's a huge mega ritual, bell, book, and candle. Yeah, very ominous. The 30th Olympiad, the XXX is right off the bat a warning indicator of a hazard or poison. It's a danger signal. And the music that they're going to play for the opening ceremony is the responsibility of Underworld, which is the place of the dead. So if they're going to have a death ritual, that's pretty fitting. There's another death ritual signaled through the number 27. And so many items of the Olympics have been stamped with the number 27. One in particular I have to mention is the starting date, July 27, which there's a SRA, a Satanic Ritual Abuse Calendar, and this is called the Grand Climax. And as part of this, a human female is sacrificed, and there's gross sexual abuse along with it. So this will be happening around the world wherever people want to do that, and it'll support this July 27 mega ritual at the Olympics in London. And the 27, you can't really get away from the Club 27 meme, which is a mysterious death observation of famous musicians such as recently Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Brian Jones, Robert Johnson. They all died at the age of 27. So there's that meme out there, and they are stamping this 27 all over the place. There's $27 million spent for the opening ceremony. The bell was originally stated to be 27 tons. So there's that death ritual. It turns out it's 23 now. Still the largest ringing bell in the world, they say, but the 23 is a DNA number. It's a genetic number, which with death and life, which is the transformation I believe they're really going for, that 23 is a real important signal number. The tickets of the game went on sale on 3/22/2010. Now the number 322 appears on the symbol for the Skull and Bones Society, right? It's a famous connection that people make. And it's very interesting that the Georgia Guidestones, which a lot of people know about, were dedicated with the erection of the center cluster on 3/22 in 1980. And mass death is forecasted there with the first guideline giving a target global population figure at under 500 million, which is about 1/14 of today's number. So that demands a significant reduction to hit their target. And the Georgia Guidestones, 3/22/1980, is exactly 30 years prior to when the tickets for the games went on sale, 3/22/2010. So that's 30 years to the 30th Olympiad, which is another ominous observation.
I brought this out in an article a while back now about Tish B'Av. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. This is obviously the day that we had the destruction of the Temple of Solomon, right? And yes. Some people have claimed, and I found different sources for this, and hence, you know, some people criticized me when I put this article together because they said, no, it's wrong. It's not on the 27th of July. It's actually at, sunset on the 28th, so about 24 hours after that. One of the sources I found, which is on about.com on their Judaism section, it claims that it's actually on July 22nd to July 28th. So, you know, it varies a little bit. We're talking about a time span of about 24 hours there. I still believe and think that it's quite significant that that there is a correlation here to the dates. If you're aware of this, what's your comment on this?
Yeah, it did come to my attention, and I invested a good bit of time to determine, you know, when is the date and what's the significance of it, if it is or isn't. And I think it is important that it comes during that time, because especially they're focused on the temple. Everything that they're doing relates to a temple in, you know, related to Zion, created in London. And because of the association of the temple on the 9th of Av, this really can't be dismissed if it's even one day out, if it's on the second day. It's right in the target zone. So the precision, I think, doesn't really matter so much. You know, if they're going to have a death ritual and destroy the temple, if it doesn't come on opening day, the second day being the 9th of Av would certainly seem like an appropriate target. I don't think they're going to have a mass event that'll kill a lot of people right there on that day. I think it's more likely that the whole season will pass because of the importance of that whole death ritual and the bell, book, and candle playing that whole thing out. I think that magically is going to be more significant in regards to bringing forth their plans than just killing a bunch of people right up front. So that's my take on it.